You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Nicole Ackman's interview with the director of Misbehavior, Philippa Lofoy.
Last year, 100 million people tuned in live to Miss World, more viewers than for the moon landings or the World Cup final.
Beautiful, darling.
Mum, don't. You and your sisters used to love playing Miss World.
We also like to eat our own snot.
They must have no defects. And if they're not pretty much 36, 24, 36,
come on.
The curves won't be in the right places.
But we really believe beauty isn't just skin deep. The girls also get marks on charm, grace, deportment.
Swimsuits.
Miss World rehearsals are underway.
Alphabetical order, come on, Yugoslavia. What are you doing up here? That's A.
I'm the first Black South African to take part.
I'm the first Miss Grenada.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bob Hope.
The last time Bob guested on this show, he brought the winning girl home with him.
They're turning oppression into spectacle. Let's make a spectacle of our own. We'd infiltrate the theatre.
We've just been smoking and watching like in a heist film.
If I win, there will be little girls who might start to believe they have a place in the world.
We're Black. We're not going to be Miss World.
You don't own me.
It's not you we're angry at.
I look forward to having your choices in life.
But it's all just flashbulbs in your face.
Not so many flashbulbs for me.
I don't want you to think I'm some kind of brute that doesn't consider the feelings of women. I consider feeling women all the time.
This. Tonight may be the start of something, Bob.
This competition makes us compete with each other and makes the world narrower for all of us in the end. Why should any woman have to earn her place in the world by looking a particular way?
You don't. He doesn't. Why should we?
Welcome to the Next Best Picture podcast. I'm Nicole Ackman. I'm here with Philippa Lofoy, the director of Misbehavior. So how have you been doing in quarantine?
What have I been doing? I've been finishing off a wonderful television project for HBO called The Third Day. And it's screening at the moment, actually. It's two trilogies, one with Jude Law as the lead, and then my one has the wonderful actress Naomi Harris as my lead. It's very mysterious and scary and set on a strange island in the UK.
Oh, fantastic. That's exciting. Well, I really enjoyed Misbehavior. I absolutely loved it. And I was curious, what drew you to this story?
I just thought it was just the most amazing story. I was only a little girl in 1970, so I wasn't really aware of anything to do with the women's liberation movement or the fact that the first Black woman won that competition. And when Suzanne Mackey introduced me to this story, I just thought this was the most fantastic opportunity to explore two groups of very, very young, strong women coming from different points of view and meeting on this fateful day where the young feminists decided to invade the stage of this beauty pageant. I just thought it was a great story because it combines humor and fun and the energy of young people, but also with feminist politics and racist politics, racism, and apartheid. And that particular event seemed to be like a lightning conductor for protests back then. It just seemed like a brilliant terrain for a story.
Absolutely. And did you try to kind of recreate specific moments or costumes or anything like that from the Miss World competition based on footage or photos of it?
Yes, we did a huge amount of research because it was a true story. We spoke at great length to the women who you see in the film, Sally Alexander and Jo Robinson, and the women who are the feminists, the young feminists. And we also spoke to Jennifer Hostin at great length and Pearl Jansen, and they gave us so much material about the time and what their attitudes were. And also we looked into all the wonderful archive that's of the real competition that you can see it on YouTube, actually. And the costume designer and the makeup designer were really inspired by the real costumes of the time and all the real hairdos. And it's such a joy to be able to recreate those looks. And, the fashions are pretty cool in 1970.
Absolutely. That's so cool. And, talking about you were directing this movie that's based on these real people who are still alive today. I know you've also done some work on The Crown. What is that like as opposed to working on a period piece that's, maybe based on fictional characters or based on people who have long since passed away? Is it kind of more of a challenge?
Not really. I've done, because I started off as a documentary maker, I've always been really interested in telling real life stories. And most of the filming and directing that I've done is with real life stories, and often very hard hitting stories, like Three Girls, which was about the Rochdale grooming case. I think that's on Netflix at the moment. It was a BBC thing. So I'm very used to doing real life stories. I think you have to just use the same duty of care to your subjects of your film, whether they are alive or dead. Actually, even in The Crown, we were so scrupulous with the research, and you did so much investigating to build those stories. And the same in Misbehaviour, even it's not a documentary, it is a drama, so we do have invented scenes in there, but everything is inspired or based on something real or true. And I think that's really, really important when you do tell stories inspired by, the truth.
I definitely appreciated that as someone who studied history at university. I thought it was really great to kind of look at it and see how much of it truly, came from the truth, which I thought was amazing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything, whenever you were doing the research, that you found that really surprised you?
I think what surprised me was really, when you think of feminism in the 1970s or 1970, you can think of these very sort of earnest, very serious people who, there's a cliche, isn't there, about that kind of feminism, sort of women wearing dungarees and being very, very sort of cross and earnest. But what I found when I spoke to the women who decided to invade the stage and make that direct action, they were so young, and they were inventing women's liberation as they went along. There wasn't a kind of map for them. Nobody had drawn a sort of set of rules. They were absolutely at the forefront of creating what those demands were and what was important to them. And like Sally Alexander always said, she just says, we were making it up as we went along. We didn't know how it would turn out. And I think that was really interesting, because you think back at those times and you think they must have known more or whatever, but they were just so young. And I think what they did was really brave. So when I was speaking to them, and they're all in their 70s now, how brave they were as young women to stand up and fight for their rights. For people like me, that made it possible for me to perhaps go to university and then, and become a director. I think if those women hadn't done that then, we wouldn't be where we are today, even though there's a long way to go still. You see what I mean? There's still a long way to go.
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture. from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
I thought that it was very interesting that some of the things that we see these women fighting for and discussing in the film, from the issues to kind of the generational divide that Sally Alexander has with her mother, are things that women are continuing to fight for today. And was that something that you sort of deliberately wanted to highlight within the film?
Yes, definitely. I think the film is one of very many different perspectives. It has the young feminist perspective and it has the older mother perspective, and both have really valid points to make. It also has the point of view of the contestants, and that was really, really important to us, that we didn't just make a film about the feminists, but that we made a film about Jennifer Hostin and Pearl Jansen and the other contestants who used that beauty pageant to advance themselves and to take an opportunity. There were so few opportunities for women in those days that you had to grab the opportunity where you could. And I think that that was also really interesting, to not judge each person's point of view, but to lay it out in front of us for the audience to make up their mind, or to see how complicated it is, really.
I also think it's a really special piece in how it sort of addresses that so much of feminism, both at the time and I think even now, is very centered around the white experience. And, you know, there's that great scene in between Keira Knightley and Guma Bhattacharya where they sort of address that they're sort of ignoring that some of these contestants are really making strides for women of color and black women specifically. And I really like that the film actually addresses that straight on, because it is something that we're seeing more of, I think, in modern feminism today.
I think that's so true. And I think that was the other reason why we really wanted to make this film, because it was a perfect opportunity to look at that and to celebrate that achievement. I mean, that was, you know, for Jennifer to get on that stage, and she'd tell you herself, but for her to get on that stage and hold her head up high when she knew there was a sort of bubble of racism around her, and to win and to turn those ideals of Western beauty on their head in one fell swoop was an incredible achievement. And not only that, Pearl Jansen, Miss Africa South, came second. So it was two black women in the forefront there. And that was an extraordinary event, really, and one which we wanted to celebrate for those reasons.
Absolutely. I also think it's very special that this film, which is so much about women and about different types of women, was also, you know, written and directed by women. Was that something that you were sort of cognizant of whenever you were making it?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's very, very hard to get to direct a film if you're a woman. It has been. And I think for younger generations than me, I hope it's going to be easier. But we were very conscious that we were an all-female team, apart from one of our HODs. They were all women. And it's, you know, often you get, yeah, you're starting to get crews being more diverse ethnically and gender-wise, but it's not that often that you get films made by women, you know, run by women. So the head honchos are also women. Mm-hmm. Our two producers were women. And that was an enormous pleasure. And also when we were creating our team, we made sure that it was a very, very diverse team. And that was a really good thing to do. It was a very nice atmosphere, very egalitarian and encouraging from, you know, from the youngest runners to the, you know, to some of our older, really experienced crew members.
That's so great to hear. I think you can really feel in the film that it's from a female perspective. I also have to ask, you know, Keira Knightley and Gugma Bothar are sort of two of the queens of period drama. So what was it like getting to direct them?
Oh, it was so exciting. I've always been a huge fan of both Keira and Gugu. And to get to work with them was just absolutely awe-inspiring. They're both incredibly clever women and both political. They both are very interested in politics. And that, I think, is what drew them to doing this project. And they were brilliant fun to work with. And, you know, their performances are beautiful, really, really passionate and sensitive and also funny, because it's a really nice thing to not take ourselves too seriously as well. And I think Keira particularly enjoyed the humour of Sally and the scrapes that she got into as well. I think she really enjoyed that aspect of it.
I was going to say, I do think it's a lot funnier than we typically get to see Keira be in a lot of the type of movies that she does. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
So do I. I think she's really funny. And that was a very nice thing, because I haven't seen her do that kind of performance very much. And I think that was one of the things that attracted her to playing Sally. I mean, Sally in real life is one of the most inspiring women I've met. She's super brainy but also had this delicious, a sort of self-deprecating sense of humour that we wanted to capture in the script. And I think Keira definitely caught that mixture of shyness and intelligence and also that kind of self-deprecating humour and getting things wrong, you know, being really human.
Awesome. Well, that is all that we have time for today, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I absolutely love this film. To everyone listening to the podcast, definitely make sure that you check out Misbehavior. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you.
And have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Goodbye. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Nicole Agman's interview with the director of Misbehavior, Philippa Lofthorpe, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. You can subscribe to us on Megaphone, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, wherever podcasts are listened to. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we shall see you all next time.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not, it's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.